This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. I have a special treat for you because I'm doing an in-person, live to me, recording today because I am at the Podcast Movement Conference with Nicoletta Heidegger. We're in Orlando, Florida, where our hair is going insane because humidity. But it's been great to hang out with Nicoletta and spend more quality time with her. Her podcast, Sluts and Scholars, if you haven't yet checked it out, it's amazing. It's part of Pleasure Podcasts, which is the collective that I'm in. Nicoletta is a licensed marriage and family therapist who practices in Los Angeles. She received her BA in psychology from Stanford University, her MA in clinical psychology from Pepperdine, and her master's of education in human sexuality from Widener University. Nicoletta is currently pursuing her PhD in human sexuality from Widener. When not working with clients, Nicoletta creates and hosts the growing hit podcast, Sluts and Scholars, and teaches educational seminars and classes to help others learn about sexual and mental health. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Nicoletta.
Thank you for having me.
We're doing a crossover episode, so we're going to go back and forth, and you'll be able to, you know, so it's going to be like, she's going to interview me, I'm going to interview her. We're basically going to have a conversation.
Is that what a conversation is?
Yeah.
First, before we like dive into what we wanted to talk about today, I think it's just such a funny thing being here at this podcast with you because we are like the sex people here. We're both like, didn't plan it, but we're both wearing our clitoris. Is that how you say it? Plurally? Clitoris? Our clitoris necklaces?
We each have a clitoris necklace. Clitoris necklaces. Mine was gifted to me by the sex educator, Elle Chase.
Mine was gifted to me by Betty Dodson.
And we just showed up on the first day both wearing them. And so people think we're like in a cult.
Which we kind of are.
The cult of the clitoris.
Yeah. So there are no sex panels here. There are a few that like touch on it a little bit.
A little.
But barely.
Over clothes.
Yeah.
Touching. Over clothes.
But whenever we tell people what we're doing, people come talk to us.
Yeah. They think we're the coolest people like at the party. You know, the Stitcher party, they're like, you have a podcast on what? And I'm like, well, what's your podcast about? And they're like, I do a podcast on wealth management. And then I don't know kind of what to say back to them. And then I was like, oh, that's why you think like we're cool, but you don't even know us.
We had applied to be on a panel here, but I don't know if it was just...
It was not accepted.
Yeah, it was not accepted. We don't really know the reason, but it's interesting to be at a more mainstream conference because usually the ones that we go to, there's a lot more...
sex positivity.
Yeah, leather.
Inclusion.
Bondage.
I mean, non-monogamy.
You're listing like the other things. Yeah. I'm like, butt plugs.
Yeah. diversity.
Oh, that stuff.
Yeah, that.
But we were trying to figure out over some house-made guacamole today what we wanted to talk about. And something that I find really interesting in what's going on in our like sex educator culture today is this cancel culture. What I mean by cancel culture is like if somebody fucks up, whether that be a company or an educator or a therapist who makes, whether it's a racist comment or a sexual assault allegation, we kind of have this reverse bullying that happens where we like cancel somebody. And I would love to talk with you about that because I know we've both had experiences with people who suck and experiences with people who are great. And like, when is it time, or is there even a time for redemption?
Yeah, it's such a big question. The thing I'll say is that just like happens in other parts of our life, like what's playing out in sex positivity circles, right? Whether it's consent violations, issues around coercion or sexual assault or sexual harassment, and call out culture and cancel culture are happening in other industries too,
right?
We're just mirroring that, and we're playing it out on our particular, you know, playing field, but it is happening in all these other industries and all these other different worlds.
Yeah. I used to ride horses, and they're finally doing it in that world.
I also used to ride horses competitively.
Really? Wow, we have so many overlaps. Also alpha delts.
Oh my God. We found out we were in the same co-ed literary society at college. We're both alpha delt. Yeah, I didn't know you rode horses.
Yeah.
We just are finding this out about each
other.
Well,
they just, this guy who used to teach the hunter jumper Olympic team, George Morris.
George Morris?
Has now been blacklisted from everything.
I mean,
because of sexual assault allegations.
I knew who George Morris was when I was like 10.
Really?
I mean, he's been around for a long time.
Right. And so this is stuff that happened back in the 60s, 70s, mm-hmm. and probably continuing on, but yeah. like a huge figure in that community.
Huge.
And he's now
a
not allowed
star.
To anything.
The equivalent of a rock star.
Yes.
In the show world.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So the questions are there. Like how, first of all, how do we handle it? And the one thing I'll say is that I have heard very compelling arguments and generally believe that this sort of traditional mainstream solution to these are to treat them as crimes, to be taken to the police and law enforcement, to be investigated, to be prosecuted. And my experience has been that people who are victims of sexual assault, who are survivors of all kinds of violence, often do not get justice through the legal system. And so when someone says, well, if something went wrong, just call the police. You can't always trust the police,
especially if you're a minority or.
So what happens is then the community is left to say, what do we do? We are a loosely knit group of people who have some shared values and some shared culture. And this is not going to play out, you know, on court TV. How do we work through this?
What is the difference between call out culture versus like cancel culture?
Oh, I think they're just really related because I think what happens is people get called out. And by call out, I mean someone fucks up in some way, like you were saying. And basically they get called out, which means they publicly get, they're targeted and then they're shamed usually. It's usually a sort of a tool of shame. But it's also to make public what their infraction was. Mm-hmm. And I'm not against calling out per se, in that I do believe if you are considered a leader in your community or you are considered someone with power, you have to be held to a higher standard, right? So you're not allowed to teach classes on consent mm-hmm. and then have a consent violation, mm-hmm. right? That's not I don't think that's a quote private matter, right? I think that's something that people need to know about.
And you had such a great live podcast where you talked about assault things happening within our community.
Within our
because it does happen and there have been more throughout the years. And the response that people have been taking is to like form an accountability pod.
Yes.
So how would I describe that? Like,
so what's happening now, this sort of model, but again, it's like, it's a living, breathing thing that's sort of developing right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that sort of had to happen is people began taking these things seriously and then saying, okay, now what are we going to do about it? So in the case of one educator, they formed an accountability pod, which is a group of advisors, kind of an advisory board, who had experience in social justice, restorative processes. And those folks then went about creating a plan for the person who did the harming to of self-reflection, of awareness, of therapy, of a reading list, of coming to terms with what they did, what reparations may be needed, and how they're going to kind of move forward. And then also survivors and victims have pods as well. They're more like support pods.
Right.
And some of those pods also collect information about the perpetrator from other folks. Because one thing we see again and again is that when one person comes forward, often that gives permission and space for other people to come forward. And so this idea that a consent violation is an isolated incident between two people, and that just something went sideways, but that it's just those two people is
which
usually
can happen, which but it doesn't happen, seem as
but it doesn't
common.
Bear out. Yeah. And so there are these accountability pods and there are these support pods. I think first of all, obviously survivors of every kind need support. Absolutely. They need to be validated. I believe survivors, and we have to listen to them.
Let's take a break for commercials, and we'll be back. Hey everyone, it's Kinktober. As the days get shorter and the nights get longer, our friends at the Pleasure Chest will be turning a kinky corner and diving deeper into cosplay, bondage, and a bit more BDSM. They'll be featuring some of their favorite kink folks and products on their site and social media all month long. From pup hoods and pony plugs to sexy costumes and size-inclusive lingerie, the Pleasure Chest has everything you need to kick up your kink or cosplay. Check out their selection of Halloween costumes and accessories before shopping anywhere else. All stores will have candy out and hidden boupons around the store with delicious discounts from October 30th to the 31st. You can also visit pleasurechest.com to see the schedule of their free weekly workshops and save 20% off their most popular kink, cosplay, and BDSM gear from October 25th to the 31st, online only. While you're there, if you make a purchase, use coupon code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it, and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me in my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud and my conversation with Nicoletta Heidegger.
I'm really interested by this concept of redemption.
I guess I do like the restorative justice that you said.
Restoration.
I guess what, I don't know. Redemption to me, I guess when I think about it, has to do with that somebody can come back from this.
Yes.
Like that there is a way to get this restorative justice to go back into society. And I think I feel passionate about this because I have a unique opportunity to see both sides. So as a therapist, I see survivors and I see perpetrators in my office. So not just of sexual assault, like I see people who have done shitty things and I see people who have received shitty things on a spectrum of topics. And sure, I can decide like not to see those folks, but I really try to like find empathy for the quote unquote monsters, for the bad folks. That's often why I do a lot of work with non-offending pedophiles. What is difficult to me, I guess, is I get to see how a person becomes the way that they are. The fucked upness of our culture, like, for example, how most men are not given like an opportunity to explore their feelings and learn boundaries, and we don't teach and we don't have sex education stuff, and then they come from an abusive background and XYZ, and that doesn't give permission to do terrible things. But I also understand.
It explains things. It puts it in context.
Yeah, exactly. It gives it a context. It gives us stuff to work through and to kind of re-narrate their life and some of the maybe negative stories that they have about people in the world and how that's impacted their behavior. So I just wonder, like, how long is restorative justice? Like, can we even put a time or a benchmark on it? And and then would we even recommend that person, like, for example, an educator, like later on after they've gone through this restorative justice time?
And it's something I'm struggling with now. I feel like someone has gone through a restorative justice process. They've been entirely transparent about it, which means they have been posting things on Medium. It's not a secret group. It's not a link with a password. Anyone can read about this journey. And I find myself going, okay, so is this a model that we can now kind of look at and say, this could be a blueprint or an outline for someone else? Because there is something really problematic and harmful about shunning someone in the community. It sets things up as very black and white. Mm-hmm. You're a good person or you're a bad person. I remember when I spoke at the Consent Summit a couple years ago that the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom put on, I began my talk as the keynote by saying, I have violated someone's consent. And everyone in this room has violated someone's consent. And if we can't come to terms with that, then we're going to keep kind of perpetuating this myth that, like, the boogeyman is around the corner and that person is evil and vile and a sociopath, but I'm a good person. So I would never do that, right?
And not just boundary consents. I mean, I guess I'm thinking even broader to, like, racist comments or unfair practices. Like, I know recently there was this thing with that company, Wildflower Sex.
Yes.
There's some articles about it if listeners want to check it out, but they kind of issued an apology and some folks were like, you know, it's not enough to have an apology. Like, we need more. We need systemic change. So I guess I wonder, like, what does systemic change look like?
So I think the shunning thing is important because I feel like it's a sort of a function of individualism, first of all, right? That you struck on this right away, which is this individual who did this thing was not hatched in an egg, literally grew up in a sex negative, heterosexist, patriarchal, racist, white supremacist, classist, ableist,
yes,
capitalist society.
All the ists.
Right? So those things created this person, right? And so this isn't about sort of individualism and a few bad apples. And I feel like we are already pretty isolated from one another. You know, I feel like if there's an existential crisis of my generation, and certainly of people younger than me, it is about isolation. It's about talking to people on our phones, but not actually being in the same room with them.
I guess because what I've seen, I don't know if this is what you're saying, but when we kind of have this restorative justice or this cancel culture approach, people stop talking. They're like, oh, like, you're canceled. You know, you're done. You're deleted. Yeah. I'm going to tell everyone you're deleted. And so there aren't further conversations.
Right.
And I wonder, like, is that helping change things systemically?
The answer has to be no. I think that there are people who are given opportunities to do the right thing, given opportunities to apologize, and don't.
And they don't.
And then
or
it's
they
like,
just like don't get it.
Okay, you're like not here for the conversation. You're not listening to people who are coming forward and saying you've harmed them. Yeah. You're not listening to other people who are saying the way in which you frame this or talk about this is also harmful. But if there are people who say, oh my God, I fucked up, but I do want to learn. I do want to improve myself. I do want to see what my blind spots are. I do want to analyze my behavior. I do want to figure out why or how I did something that was harmful. Because often people harm without knowing they're harming.
Yeah. Or they might not agree.
For me, if someone says I harmed them, I don't feel like it's appropriate for me to say, no, I didn't. If someone is
harmed. What if you really believe you didn't?
The thing is, they were harmed. Even if I don't understand why they felt harmed by that word, by that action, they were harmed and we are in relationship with each other, all of us, all the time. And I have to take that seriously.
But on a smaller scale, like when I have a couple in the office, if one of them says, I did this, no, you didn't, yes, you did, it's not helpful and it's not about figuring out the truth. Mm. It's the fact that you can't really argue with a feeling. So validating like someone's experience, you don't have to agree to say like, wow, I can understand that really hurt you. Mm-hmm. It seems like this is really difficult. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that, right, you know, this is having such an impact on you.
Right.
I guess that sounds a little like blamey, but I think there's ways to own it without saying you agree or disagree, I guess.
Well,
or hold
I think,
space for someone's
I also think
hurt.
We have to acknowledge that people have different experiences. Yeah. And that when you say a simple sentence to me, I'm hearing it in a very particular way. And my own wounds, my framework, my lens, my baggage, my cultural history, my gender.
All, the day you're having.
The day I'm having.
If you've taken medication yet.
Yes, exactly.
Coffee.
And so all of that is going to inform what I actually hear you say. I have seen time and time and time again where people are in a story, a thing happened, and they have two totally different stories about it. There's not one who's right and one who's wrong. It was their experience.
I think there is a pushback of some people being like, okay, I have harmed, so tell me what to do now. Mm-hmm. Tell me how to fix this. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I'm like, yeah, like maybe they do need resources. Can we connect them with those? But also if it's maybe a person in power asking marginalized person for the help, is it the marginalized person's job to do the free labor and fix it for them?
No.
Like, I guess, where's the line between being like, here's some resources and here's some education versus like, let me do this restorative justice work for you?
I mean, I know someone who, when they had an accountability pod, they actually paid them.
Okay. So it was like, hey, can I pay you for a consultation?
Can I pay you for your labor, for your expertise, for your knowledge?
That's a good
for
idea.
For your experience in this. And then it acknowledges their labor. Because the other thing that we have to say is that everyone I know who's doing restorative justice work is oppressed in some way. You know what I mean? I don't know a lot of like white, cis men who are heterosexual and middle or upper middle class and able-bodied, like doing restorative justice work. They're out there. But often there are marginalized folks doing restorative justice. And so we have to definitely not exploit their labor if we are somehow dominant over them or, you know, in the role of the oppressor, whether we want to be or not.
Well, we're also recording this in the wake, which actually I've been in such a bubble in travel that like I was surprised at lunch today when you said that Epstein took his own life. And I was like, when did this just happen? You were like, no, it's 2 days ago.
It's like a few days ago. Yeah.
Yes, I need to wake the fuck up. Is that justice? Like I do. Oof, you were mentioning when we were talking earlier, like survivors oftentimes want justice. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it doesn't feel necessary for healing. Sometimes it does. But is that justice?
Mm-hmm. It's a really thorny issue. And I think
like
even,
if that were
even
someone,
people who are harmed by him, I'm guessing, have very different responses to it.
Yeah. I guess we can't speak for them. But
no.
If you were in that, I don't know if you've had assault experiences that you've like talked about before, but if a perpetrator that you wanted to go through like justice or go through the criminal justice system killed themselves instead, would you feel like justice was served?
I mean, that gets to the core of what do survivors want, right? So I'm thinking like,
and that's subjective.
I want for people who've wronged me or harmed me, I want them to take responsibility for it. I want them to apologize. I want them to learn something from the experience. For me, as someone who's getting increasingly suspicious of the criminal justice system.
I thought you were going to say suspicious of his death because I know there's...
Oh, well, there's conspiracy theories. Yeah. No, but I don't know that I need someone to be like locked up. I need my experience recognized. I need it heard, even if it's by a group of 10 people or it's in the New York Times. Like I need my experience heard and known, and I want to be seen and understood in that experience. But sort of the Buddhist in me, I don't feel like I get to call the shots on another person. But then I can see how this like would enrage people who are harmed by Epstein, who would be like, no, he deserves some fucking suffering. I suffered. And even if it was all this time in jail until his trial, even if it was people being mean to him on the internet, even if it was, you know, his family deserting him, whatever it is. Like, if I suffered greatly, I want this other person to suffer.
How do you put a price on
the equal?
Like, what would be the equal suffering?
And also, why? See, the Buddhist in me would say, I don't want to suffer, and I don't want other people to suffer. So
But like you said, we all have these different parts of ourselves. Yes. So.
And then there's also like this sort of like vigilante in me that's like, what if one of his victims,
I want to torture them with my own hands
on like the steps of City Hall in a kind of Law and Order way.
Oh, yeah, I was
like,
just thinking there's so many SVU episodes yes. where people
do that all the time.
Fight back yes. in the same way that they were abused.
Yes, it's like it's weird. I mean, these are like really thorny issues.
I've had fantasies about that for people who, you know, I've had sexual assault experiences and I've had fantasies of like, what could I do to this person that would feel equal, that would feel like good enough?
Yeah.
But to me, I think what I wanted was that they wouldn't keep doing it. And knowing that there wasn't enough evidence to, like, do anything about it or to stop them unless I wanted to continuously reach out to every person they ever dated after me.
Right. And that they, I mean, I'm thinking of one person in particular where if I sat them down today, they would be like, no, that didn't happen.
Yep, same.
Or like, you're misinterpreting it.
Yeah.
Like, I could just totally see him saying that. And
but that's where the worst comes in is yeah. to.
Or maybe in these 20, 25 years, he's had some revelations about his own behavior. Maybe Me Too has woken him up and he's
have him on the podcast.
Gone back and evaluated, his behavior towards
Wouldn't
women.
That be nice?
And has a better grasp of power dynamics. I don't know. I'm curious. Like, I'm really curious. I want listeners to write us, email us, and call us.
If you want to email me, it's lessonscholars@gmail.com.
Okay, so you can email me at tristan@puckerup.com, or you can call our toll-free hotline, 323-SEX-8266. 323-SEX-8266. I just want to know your thoughts. Are you a survivor? Are you someone who has been accused of harming someone? What are your feelings about the situation? What do you wish happened? What did happen? I'd be really interested to just let people speak in their own voices, tell their stories, be heard. There's a level of anonymity because it's the radio, right? It's not full anonymity, but people don't have to give their names. I'd be interested if people want to share any part at which you have intersected with a story of violation.
And I guess one could argue that the intersection can just be that you're like a consumer of news, because I think a lot of people in watching like the Epstein thing would be like, oh, well, he should get this. He should have gotten this. Even yeah. if they haven't, like we're doing right now.
Right.
Like
right.
even if they weren't involved.
It's time for another break. I want to shout out my awesome sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. Do you want to find out about their lineup of free pleasure ed classes? Go to pleasurechest.com and click on events. Lately, it seems like everyone is talking about self-care. Well, taking care of your body and mind is important. For me, maintaining a sexual relationship with myself is part of my self-care routine. I love mixing it up, and I like a little inspiration on that front. Sometimes holding the phone to watch something just doesn't work for me. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories to inspire and arouse. This isn't like an audiobook. It's more like hearing someone tell you the details of an escapade or listening in on an actual sex scene. It's pretty immersive that way. It's like having someone right in your earbuds. The stories are high quality, they're well produced, and they're all original. I like it because you can select from different categories, hello BDSM, and you can get a flavor of each one from the descriptions. You can choose men with women, women with women, and they're growing their men with men selections. Start one, then jump to another if that one's not for you. The majority are about 10 minutes long. And for you, my listeners, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's right. Get your first 30 days free when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. Then call me and tell me what your favorites are.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Nicoletta and I continue our talk, which was recorded at Podcast Movement in Orlando.
So I'm super interested in your work with non-offending pedophiles.
Yes.
A couple reasons. One is that you are very specific that these are pedophiles who have not either have not offended or have not been caught offending.
So also, for our listeners, we're doing like a podcast trade-off. So we're doing like a conversation, a back-and-forth convo.
Yeah.
So we get to hear a little more about my work, too.
So you said non-offending pedophiles, which I thought was interesting, the specificity. If there is a universally despised person among nearly all of humanity, it is a pedophile. The idea that you are working with pedophiles, I think there are some people out there who would say, you shouldn't even be working with them.
Like, I've had death threats.
You've had death threats.
Yeah.
And have people within sex positive communities say, you know what? You have a lot of skills, a lot of experience, a lot of smarts. Put it somewhere else. Don't put it with like the dregs of the earth.
Not that anyone has said to my face, but maybe behind my back. I think the way I've presented it, it seems to be received well when I've given it to other like sex communities. Like I presented it at a thing called ASECT and to, you know, just with the Sexual Health Alliance and a couple other radio shows. In fact, I just did one called Abe Lincoln's Top Hat with the guy who does Last Podcast on the Left. And I got at least 10 emails from people afterwards that were all either wanting more information, people who identified as minor attracted who were not offending, or people who were dating someone who had that interest. So I think it's more out there than people want to believe, and maybe more of a spectrum than people want to believe.
But even as someone who works with stigmatized communities, marginalized communities.
This is like a whole nother.
People who have like alternative gender and sexuality identities, right? Like that's part of your core people that you serve, right? As a therapist. But this has a connotation in our society of being just awful.
I think that's why I specify non-offending. I mean, I am open to working with sex offenders, people who have already offended. I haven't gotten a lot of them in my practice, but I think I specify because I'm trying to change the stigma between fantasy and desire versus behavior. Because I think in our culture, it's synonymous to say pedophile and child molester, as opposed to someone who is attracted to prepubescent children and somebody who acts on that. Usually we see that people who act on it have something else going on, like a personality disorder. But there are a lot of folks who have some level of desire for minors that don't want to do anything about it, that love children, that don't want to harm children. And they often can't find a therapist because everyone will turn them away. They'll say like, that's disgusting. Maybe not to their face, but they'll have a feeling of it. They won't know who to refer to. Let's imagine like that folks with this attraction are ticking time bombs. I don't like to label them that way because I don't view them like that, but let's imagine we're doing this from like purely a safety perspective for children. There are a lot of reasons that people assault and harm children, not just minor attraction, whether it be power or substance use or other things going on. And so if we really want to protect children, I think we need more preventative, proactive care. So if we are concerned about this population, if we do have fear around them, I don't necessarily because I know them a bit better, but for people that do have that, to just say, well, like, we should just kill them all. They don't deserve help. Who is that really protecting? So even if you don't believe that, you know, folks like that deserve a chance or redemption or restorative justice or whatever, like, is that helping? Because
you're talking about interventions before.
Yes.
Before people act on it.
Yes.
And before people commit crimes and before people may irrevocably harm someone.
Yeah, because I think the bigger than the threat of minor attraction is the threat of social shaming, stigma, and isolation and the lack of relationships and community and the effect that that has on somebody. That's usually what folks coming in with that attraction say to me. They're not struggling with how to not act on it. They're struggling with how to live their life and like find meaningful relationships.
How to reconcile their desires.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is something we allow people to do all the time.
Just not about this.
Just not about this. Because I'm thinking like when someone comes to me and says, I have just tremendous shame because I want to sniff panties. I want them to be dirty. I want to put them on my face and jerk off. Mm-hmm. And most sex educators, sex positive people would be like,
okay, great, well, find someone to give you their panties.
Like, absolutely. And even people who are like, thought that that was like, wouldn't say it. Cause they're like, I'm not going to be judgmental. I'm going to be shame free. So it's like, we'd be like, great. If someone is giving you, don't steal anyone's panties. Don't do any of this non-consensually. But if someone, and so we want to like empower them. This, and also what about people who are like, I have this amazing fantasy of being an alien and having sex with other aliens who are not part human and part animal, whatever. And those things are never going to happen.
I mean, I wish they would.
Right. But it's like,
aliens are out there listening, so it's like, please call me.
I don't then think, well, if this is a fantasy of yours, you're going to go act it out. Cause then we also know people have fantasies that literally they don't want to make come true.
Yeah. Like
it's a fantasy and they have no interest in even doing assimilation.
Yeah. Like you were talking about people who have assaulted you. Like I had fantasies of like, can I burn their house down?
But you did.
What can I throw at them?
Right.
But I didn't. But I think we have fantasy. I mean, one big fantasy I often have is when people are carrying a big tray of something and I'm like, I just want to flip that over. I don't want to hurt them. I don't want anything to happen. And I never do it. But it's this quick little fantasy of like, what would happen if I just said like, fuck this, I'm flipping this table over.
Right.
But like, not everyone wants to act on those things.
Right.
Or we have another compass, you know, guiding us.
But I think it's just, it's so stigmatized. And, but there's, and I guess there's another piece of this, which I want to get into, which just popped into my head, which is, if I fantasized about like kidnapping someone, an adult, and they wanted to be kidnapped, and we like did this kidnapping fantasy, it would be consensual. And most people believe that sex with underage people can never be consensual. Even if the underage person says it was consensual, mm-hmm. It can't be. It can't possibly be. Some people define this in terms of legal, you know, what are the ages of the people? And some people just define it in terms of like morality and ethics,
yeah.
And say a 15-year-old cannot consent in a sexual exchange with a 30-year-old.
I have a lot of mixed feelings about this.
How do we get to the consent piece of this, that your fantasy involves consent violation? Because I would say that like if someone had a rape fantasy, for example.
Consensual non-consent.
Yeah. Consensual non-consent. You know, and then like laid it out with their partner and they went through the things. I would say your fantasy is about non-consensual activities. Yeah, but then you did it safely in this other way. So
I guess if we're talking about a minor attracted person, mm-hmm. which is, that does not just include pedophiles. So there are other categories. So someone who is a pedophile is attracted to prepubescent children. Someone who is a hebephile or a hebephile is attracted to early adolescence, so like 11 to 14. So this is more like the Epstein folks. And then someone who's a hebephile or a febophile is it's teens, which is, I think, so interesting because we live in a culture that highly sexualizes youth, and that's everywhere. And everywhere. I mean, one of the big categories online is teen porn. Granted, those are adults.
Playing teens.
But, you know, the small, skinny bodies.
Dressed up like little girls.
Yeah, and a lot of the hentai, you know, porn that we see, like, are depicting small children. Mm-hmm. But it's character, so it's okay. Or at least it's viewed as legal. I mean, it's tough because ethically, legally, in my practice, I have to respect the ethical, legal bounds that are out there. So obviously, if someone reports something to me like child pornography or sex, even if it's consensual across an age group that is not okay based on the things that I've agreed to in my therapy practice, then it's reportable. But personally, I have struggles with this because on one hand, it's subjective. Age of consent has changed throughout time across, you know, different landscapes and different states. So I also believe that children and young adults have a sexuality. Do I think that means that someone in power who's an adult should prey on that? No, but I don't want to desexualize young people or let them feel like they can't make their own sexual decisions. Because when I was younger, I was always interested in some like older folks. And I always felt like I was the one being like, let's get after this. But I guess what it comes down to is the the power dynamic, mm-hmm. and that it's up to the person in power to set that boundary and make that clear. So even if there is another person saying, but it's okay, I'm consenting to it, I think when there is a power dynamic, most would argue that you can't consent.
This is the final commercial break, I promise. Then we'll wrap it up with Nicoletta. Hey everyone, it's Kinktober. As the days get shorter and the nights get longer, our friends at the Pleasure Chest will be turning a kinky corner and diving deeper into cosplay, bondage, and a bit more BDSM. They'll be featuring some of their favorite kink folks and products on their site and social media all month long. From pup hoods and pony plugs to sexy costumes and size-inclusive lingerie, the Pleasure Chest has everything you need to kick up your kink or cosplay. Check out their selection of Halloween costumes and accessories before shopping anywhere else. All stores will have candy out and hidden boupons around the store with delicious discounts from October 30th to the 31st. You can also visit pleasurechest.com to see the schedule of their free weekly workshops and save 20% off their most popular kink, cosplay, and BDSM gear from October 25th to the 31st, online only. While you're there, if you make a purchase, use coupon code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle.
Hey, Dylan, guess what?
What's that, Ginger?
I'd love for you to come with me on this amazingly sex-positive, queer, and polyam-friendly, kink-aware, all-inclusive resort vacation in paradise.
Oh, really? This trip sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Ginger A. Bentham stamp of approval?
It has the sexiest name. It's called The Swing Set Takes Desire. It takes place in Cancun, Mexico, at Desire Riviera Maya, November 2nd through 9th, 2019. This trip to paradise is co-hosted by Javie and Shara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, Bradford and Angela from the By the By podcast, and special guest Tristan Taramino, author, podcaster, and creator of excellent ethically produced porn. And you can find more information at swingsetdesire.com.
Oh, Ginger.
What?
Get with the times. Everybody knows about swingsetdesire.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set is hosting its 8th annual trip to paradise. Drop your information in the form at swingsetdesire.com and boom, hot tub happy hour.
No way! I can go there and come there too? There's this super hot harness I've been dying to use.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to swingsetdesire.com and book your trip to join us for the Swing Set Takes Desire, November 2nd through the 9th, 2019.
All right, Dylan, I'm on it. swingsetdesire.com.
You'll be glad you came.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. And here is the last segment of my conversation with Nicoletta.
I'm really struggling with this on a personal level because I'm writing my memoir. And basically, my memoir goes up until I'm about 25.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to read this.
There's a lot of stuff that you don't know about me. This is like my original origin story, not the story I tell of like how I became a sex educator, which kind of started in college. It's before that. But also a lot of the steamy sex is going to be in my next memoir. Which will cover my 20s and
30s. When's that one out?
I know. So don't worry about that. I am swinging from the chandeliers at some point. It's just not in this exact. This is more of like a sexual awakening, coming of age, figuring out I'm queer. But I have a situation where the first person that I had sexual intercourse with, and who I was in a relationship with, was older than me. I was 16. They were 21. Mm-hmm. Not a big age gap. I pursued them. I initiated the sex.
And did you feel empowered?
And I felt great about it. And yep. It was a positive experience. I never felt coerced into anything. I felt very taken care of. And I felt like he was a compassionate lover and he listened to me. And it was a great experience. Okay. So it was just a great experience. And I know people do not have those experiences. But I've wrestled for a number of reasons whether to include the story in my book. I've written it, but whether to include it. And I know that if I put it out there, there will be some people who say to me, Tristan, you were 16.
Yeah, you were victimized. This is never appropriate.
This is, there's no circumstances under which this is an assault. You're painting it as something else. So you haven't quite gotten there, or you're like not evolved, or you're like in denial. But this isn't okay. It's never okay. And still, when I look back on it with like a really strong, like, you know, anti-rape, super feminist lens, I still have to tell you the way I feel in my gut is that I don't think that I was abused or assaulted.
We have similar experiences in that realm. And I share that feeling. I think it's tough because then I have clients who come in who I have to hold to a different standard because of reporting laws. I don't know. I find myself getting stuck around this topic because I also, like, as I'm, you know, advocating for preventative care for folks with minor attraction, that's not me giving permission to act on things, to be unethical, to do illegal stuff. And knowing that in my own life, I've felt that these things were empowering. I mean, I guess some people could say that we're just, what's the word?
In denial?
In denial, right. And whatever. Yeah. I mean, that's tough because I don't want somebody to tell me about my assault.
Or my positive sexual experience.
Yeah, or define it for me. And yeah. I have clients who come in who will be telling me about physical and emotional abuse, and they are in denial. And part of the work is for me to help them maybe label that sometimes or
name it
and see the situation that they're in when they're describing like a very controlling situation and I'm hearing it. But I think there's a fine line between judgment and putting my goals onto a client versus supporting them where they're at.
Yeah. Someone just said this recently to me about you can give people tools and resources and even support to get where they're going, but you can't be invested in where they're going. You can't be invested in them doing it in a particular way, doing it at a particular speed, or where they get to. You can want for someone to get to a certain place, but you really got to kind of let it go because, yeah, I mean, that really just hit me hard when I heard someone say that. And they were talking about a totally different set of circumstances, but it sort of applies to everything, which is like, don't get invested in the outcome and don't put your goal for someone on them. They have their own life to lead, and they have their own lessons to learn, and they have their own journey. So you're using the term minor attracted. Mm-hmm. Right, instead of pedophile.
Because of the
pedophile is also not descriptive because it doesn't cover all the ages.
Yes.
Okay, so that's interesting. Do people withhold stuff from you at the beginning? Like, do they say, I'm here for this, but does other stuff get revealed as the therapeutic process happens?
I think that's true for any presenting thing. Like, sometimes people don't even know why they're coming in. So they'll come in as a couple and be like, this is our struggle. And then, like, that's not it at all after we, like, uncover stuff.
You might come in and be like, my wife has been bugging me to go to therapy. We're having trouble. Our sex life is really...
She said I have a problem. Right. It's my problem.
But I don't know what my problem is.
And then really it's like a more relational dynamic or, you know, there's other stuff going on.
Right.
In terms of the minor attraction, I mean, I think I'm pretty outspoken about that I am open to working with these folks and out there about it. So... Often when they call, I think there's a sense of safety. Sometimes, though, people who reach out in that population, the first email they send will be, like, from a pseudonym. So until they, like, feel comfortable after talking to me, they're afraid.
For good reason.
I mean, yeah, there are therapists out there who will report fantasies. Fantasies are not reportable, but I think if someone feels uncomfortable with hearing something... they may report something that's not actually reportable. So I think there are real fears out there, but definitely I think, and look, there might be people who I've seen that haven't told me stuff that they've done because they know that it's reportable, because I am very clear at the beginning of, like, I want you to feel like you can be yourself here. I want to support you. Fantasies are not reportable. I want to help you find legal and consensual, risk-aware ways to express yourself and find relationships. But if you tell me about X, Y, and Z, I have to report it.
I'm legally bound.
Do you understand? Do you have any questions? Like, tell me how that sits with you.
But has there ever been a situation where someone has said, I'm having these fantasies, I've never acted on them. And then at some point, they really trust you and they get comfortable and they say, okay, I'm thinking about acting on them. So they haven't acted on them, but they're like in a next stage of like ideation about action.
Like I said, I think what
I've
seen...
Is there like an intervention? Like what do you do in that situation?
There isn't a lot... There isn't enough research on non-offending folks because most of it has been done on incarcerated individuals. And so, like I said, there's skewed data because the folks who have committed sexual offenses often have some other co-occurring diagnosis that's impacting their ability to maybe have empathy or their ability to control themselves in a certain way. So there's usually something else going on. So I would probably know even before they told me if there were other risk factors. Maybe I wouldn't, not in all cases. But I would say I haven't had anyone who said, I'm worried I'm really going to do this. It was more that society viewed them as a ticking time bomb. So they were almost like living into this pressure of like, well, if everyone thinks that at some point I'm going to harm a child, then I guess that must be right.
Even though that's not what's in my brain.
Even though they're like, I can't see myself ever doing that. I don't want to do that, but I guess I can't work with kids, or I guess I can't do this tutoring job. I guess I can't have kids. I guess I have to stay away. Right. So I think it's almost more of like a culturally imposed thing. If there isn't other mental health stuff going on that might impact somebody's ability, to have that sort of moral reasoning.
Is it considered by the American Psychological Association, by the DSM, by a certain group of therapists to be a mental illness or disorder?
Yes. And pedophilia or hebephilia or any of those are not considered. Actually, pedophilia is the only one in the DSM. So for it to be pedophilic disorder, you have to either have acted on it or like caused harm to another person, or it has to be impacting your life negatively and like affecting the way that you live your life in a negative way. So it's not a disorder if someone just has the attraction. The same thing is true for exhibitionism and voyeurism. So you can say, I'm an exhibitionist, like I like to, you know, have sex in public or get naked in front of people. And that's all good and fine as long as it's, you know, risk aware with consenting adults and you're feeling good about it. If you were feeling shameful about it and you were exposing yourself on the train to unwilling, non-consenting people, that's disorder. But it doesn't have to be a lifelong one. Like, for example, you can be put into that category if you're, for example, if this attraction is making you feel like totally shamed and now you're depressed because of it, that might fit under the disorder because it's impacting your life. But if you address those underlying things, you can move out of it and it just be a desire, not a diagnosable disorder.
Well, that seems like a hard call. No, I'm serious. That seems like a hard call. I mean, I haven't been trained and I haven't gone to school, but it seems like, how do you decide that about someone? Does it take 6 months before you can figure it out? Like, how do you decide it?
Like, if they're okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you decide any of that for any client? Like, I don't know if it's up to me to decide.
Right.
Based on my own judgments of, like, what quote-unquote okay is. But to me, anything sexual is cool as long as it's consensual and risk-aware. I guess shame-free. I mean, a little bit of shame can be fun and sexy.
When you eroticize it in a deliberate way.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
But to me, that's kind of the only guidelines I really have. Thank you so much for coming on Sluts and Scholars and letting me come on your episode. For our listeners, for my listeners who are listening on the Sluts and Scholars, go obviously check out Sex Out Loud if that's not something you're already subscribed to. You can check us out at slutsandscholars.com, email us at slutsandscholars@gmail.com, on Instagram at slutsandscholars, Twitter at slutscholars. And it's really, really helpful if you could please go on any app or whatever that you listen to, like leave us a review. It really is helpful. And of course, if you would like to give us your money, patreon.com/slutsandscholars.
And for my people, you just found out how to follow Sluts and Scholars. So you should subscribe to the podcast, go to the website, support it on Patreon. I also have a Patreon, but my Patreon has revolved around my memoir writing. So I'm just putting ads on my show and that's how I pay for it, kids. I know some of you don't like them, but if you want to support my writing process and me being able to take more time to write, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. We are here live at Podcast Movement, an amazingly interesting conference in Orlando, Florida. Till next time.
Bye.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, and Dylan Thomas on the editing. Everyone at Voice America, thanks so much. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. Until then, you can catch me on all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino, my website, TristanTaramino.com, and the show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Until next time, everyone, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.